immigrant kids to detention in federal shelters this year. It's a new record. Are you referring to 2026? And if so, if you could elaborate on that, we just have a minute.
Yes, that was a separate piece that we wrote last year. And this is sort of a separate thing that's happening where, in addition to this family detention center where parents and children are held together, there's federal shelters where kids who are unaccompanied are housed. And so what we found is that ICE arrests inside the United States in some cases are separating children from their parents, and those kids are being sent alone to this network of shelters where before also only housed, usually only housed border crossers, are now housing kids who have lived in the United States for many years.
Micah Rosenberg, thank you so much for joining us, investigative reporter at ProPublica. We'll link to your new piece, The Children of Dili. And again, on Monday, February 23rd, Democracy Now! Will be celebrating our 30th anniversary at Riverside Church in New York. Guests include Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, Maria Ressa, Michael Stipe, Wynton Marsalis, Mossab Abu-Toha, V, Hooray for the Riffraff, and more. See democracynow.org for more information. We look forward to seeing you all there. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York with Amy Goodman in Los Angeles. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Is autism an epidemic? Or is it a superpower? Are you a little bit on the spectrum? Or are you hashtag actually autistic? I'm Carrie Stewart Lingle, host of NeuroEmergent. Join me from 11 a.m. to noon on the fourth Wednesday of every month to explore neurodiversity in the Pacific Northwest and beyond, right here on KBOO Community Radio.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Primate Research Center at OHSU could turn into an ape sanctuary. Advocates criticize Oregon Democrats for not pushing their tax plan further to fund state services. And in international news, Chinese leader Xi Jinping purges two top generals. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, February 10, 2026. I'm Eric Leuschner. The Oregon Primate Center could be closing up shop. The Oregon Health and Science University Board approved a plan to negotiate with the federal government over the future of the research center, which it operates and manages. That could mean turning it into a primate sanctuary. The Primate Research Center is one of seven federally funded national primate research centers in the United States. It is located on 200 acres of land in Hillsboro, opened in 1962. It was established by the National Institutes of Health and receives some $11 million in federal grants annually. The center maintains a colony of 4,200 non-human primates cared for by 12 veterinarians and 100 full-time technicians. Living conditions at the facility are inspected biannually by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The primates are used in biomedical research into fertility control, embryonic development, obesity, brain development and degeneration, and newly emerging viruses, especially HIV-related agents. Animal rights activists have long sought to close the facility down, arguing the research is ethically and scientifically suspect. The resolution opens a 180-day period in which OHSU may negotiate with the NIH on an agreement to transform the research center into an animal sanctuary. It also directs the center to pause unnecessary breeding of new monkeys during the negotiation process. And the amendment specifically introduced language emphasizing that the ongoing primate research should continue in areas where validated alternatives do not yet exist. Critics of yesterday's resolution say it's a hasty and rash response to political pressure. Primate Center Director Skip Boehm said, quote, "Simply announcing the resolution has undermined OHSU's credibility as a science-based institution. Scientists across the U.S. are questioning OHSU's reliability as a research partner, end quote. Neil Barnard with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine said, quote, physicians all over Oregon are delighted to see a transition away from monkey experiments towards better research methods that will help our patients, end quote. Others rejected the claim that the primate-based research was outdated. OHSU Professor Monica Hinz, who leads a lab at the Primate Center, said, quote, the science conducted at the ONPRC saves lives. There are no alternative methods at this time that can fully replicate the complexity of primate coagulation biology, end quote. Board members said before voting they recognized the monumental stakes of the decision before them. Senior Vice President Kathy Guillermo of People for Ethical Treatment of Animals said, quote, this is a glorious day for monkeys and for science, end quote. Oregon Democrats' proposal to shield some state revenue from federal tax cuts is receiving criticism from those who say it's leaving vulnerable families behind. Critics argue that disconnecting from only three federal tax codes isn't enough to generate the revenue needed to support thousands of Oregonians facing drastic cuts in food and health care assistance. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Oregon lawmakers have proposed disconnecting the state's tax code from parts of the federal code in order to retain some of the money that would be lost to tax breaks from H.R. 1. The budget reconciliation bill passed last July. However, people advocating for working-class Oregonians say the plan does not go far enough. The state budget faces a nearly $900 million shortfall due to recent federal tax changes, and the new legislation would preserve close to a third of that. Annie Naranjo Rivera with the Oregon Working Families Party says at a time when 340,000 Oregonians are facing lost or reduced SNAP benefits, as well as cuts to Medicaid, state lawmakers need to do more.
Do we choose to continue these policies, which were handed down to us through H.R. 1, or are we going to have the moral conviction to make different policy choices to stand up for people who are going hungry and people who deserve leaders to fight for them?
The proposal from state Democrats would use the money saved from eliminating three federal tax deductions to increase Oregon's earned income tax credit for low-income Oregonians. Funds would also go towards a new credit for businesses that add new jobs in the state. Republicans in Salem argue the plan amounts to a tax hike for most residents. But Britt Conroy with Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon says the state should not adhere to federal tax breaks that primarily benefit the wealthy. He says if Oregon doesn't disconnect further from the federal tax code and end long-standing state tax breaks for the wealthy, the state will not have enough resources to support families who need it.
Our elected leaders need to be responsible to design policies that fit the needs of Oregonians, not simply copy what's coming down from Congress, regardless of who's in power in D.C.
Naranjo Rivera warns corporate interests in Salem are swaying lawmakers into a compromise that harms working families. She says it's not fair to only point the finger at Republicans who supported H.R. 1.
Democrats, what are you doing to stop these handouts to the ultra-wealthy at a time when we're asking families to go without food?
The bill had a public hearing last week that garnered about 500 written comments. It is currently in committee in the state Senate. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
A growing percentage of candidates in state legislative elections across the country are running unopposed, which one expert calls bad for democracy. However, partisan gerrymandering may not be the main culprit for this growing trend. Eric Tegedoff has more in Idaho.
State legislative elections across the country have become less competitive. An Idaho expert says that's bad for democracy. While races for seats in Congress largely remain competitive, a growing share of state elections are uncontested. Charles Hunt, an associate professor of political science at Boise State University, says Republicans ran unopposed in half of Idaho's legislative races in 2022, making control of the state legislature a foregone conclusion for the party. However, while some point to partisan gerrymandering, Hunt says there are other reasons for less competitive seats, such as the more natural process of partisan sorting that's happened over the past 50 years.
We know that more and more Republicans are coalescing in rural areas, Democrats in urban areas, and then suburbia is a little more up for grabs. But geographically speaking, partisan voters are living near other partisan voters who agree with them much more often than they used to.
Hunt notes that when it comes to gerrymandering, the point is usually not to create uncontested seats, but to spread a party's voters throughout as many elections as possible. He also says that independent redistricting commissions, such as in Idaho, are not necessarily solutions to decreasing the number of uncompetitive races. Hunt says it can be hard to recruit people to oppose uncontested candidates in districts that have heavy partisan leanings, even if a candidate is well-liked and well-known in their community.
Given how big an investment it is to run in a race like this, and by investment, of course, I mean money, but also time. You often have to quit your job or take a leave of absence. It's tough on your family. You're not going to do that if you stand no chance of winning.
Hunt compares politicians who run unopposed to monopolies. He says elected officials aren't incentivized to come up with new ideas and can instead do the bare minimum for their constituents, which is bad for democracy.
If you have a competitive district or a competitive state legislature, then the parties really have to work hard to convince voters that they can be trusted to do a good job so that voters will reelect them.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegeda.
As ICE and Border Patrol plan more operations across the country, a legal expert explains the rights you have when face-to-face with immigration agents. Simone Perez has more in Virginia.
A Virginia legal expert is laying out what you can and can't do when protesting the actions of immigration enforcement. After Renee Good and Alex Pretty were shot by immigration officers, Republican officials were quick to argue that compliance with the officers would have led to a different outcome. As many Virginians confront Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Border Patrol agents in their communities, there are questions about which actions are valid under the First Amendment. Chin Lay is the director of the Center for Civil Rights and Civil Liberties at the University of Virginia. He explains which forms of protest are legally protected.
You can speak forcefully, you could express your opinion, and you could shout what you believe. You can share information publicly, including alerts about where law enforcement is operating. You can take video, record, publish details, share details about where ICE officers are performing their duties in public.
ICE has scaled down operations in Minneapolis since the killings of Good and Pretty, but future operations have been discussed in other cities across the country. Lay says there's a legal line that's been crossed once a person impedes the ICE officer from doing their job, such as forming a blockade or getting in between them and a person they're trying to detain. He adds that following caravans of ICE officers in a car could meet the definition of interference, but it depends.
Let's say you're tailing very close and someone might interpret that as impeding or trying to interfere in some way. Those might be gray lines, but simply following around ICE vehicles and other law enforcement is generally understood to be lawful activity.
More than 8,000 people have been detained in Virginia and Washington, D.C., according to data from the Prison Policy Initiative. I'm Simone Perez, Virginia News Connection.
Oregon is sitting around 25% of its regular snowfall, possibly setting the state up for its lowest snowpack on record this winter. Usually, the end of March is the peak snowpack of the year. Oregon's last record-breaking low for snowpack was in 2015. Climate change has accelerated the trend of low snowpack. When the mountains are warmer, water can't freeze. That means low snowpack and not enough snow melt, which feeds streams and aquifers. Ample snow to melt means forests stay wetter longer, reducing wildfire risk. Low snowpack spells a tough spring and summer for farmers, wildlife, and everyone impacted by wildfires. Oregonians may still see snow before the winter is out. The Portland Bureau of Transportation is prepared, and five of their snow plows got a new name. The new snow plows are Keep Portland Cleared, Mrs. Slippy, Damien Blizzard, a sleet car named De-Icer, and Pink Pony Plow. The basis of the warrant for a Georgia Election Center raid will be unsealed. President Trump not backing down on suing IRS for $10 billion, and a former acting DHS secretary voices opposition to some of the ICE reforms proposed by Democrats. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We collaborate as a cabinet. We're all extremely close, know what we're doing at all times, pretty much, to keep not only our country safe, but our world safe.
Attorney General Pam Bondi implies sending National Intelligence Director Tulsi Gabbard to an FBI raid of a Georgia election center reflected collaboration on vital security issues, but continues to refuse to explain further. A federal judge is ordering Bondi to release the basis prosecutors used to get a search warrant of the Fulton County Election Center. The raid seems tied to debunked but repeated claims by President Donald Trump that the 2020 election was riddled with fraud. Democracy experts say the raid could be a practice run for November. They cite Justice Department suits against multiple states for extensive private voter information. The president has said Republicans should take over running elections in selected jurisdictions, and his former advisor Steve Bannon says ICE will surround polling places. Meanwhile, Trump is suing the IRS and the Treasury Department for $10 billion for leaking his tax information during his first administration. News outlets used leaked tax data to support charges of a long pattern of profound business fraud, charges that later ended in $500 million in New York state fines. Arizona Democratic Senator Ruben Gallego is angry American taxpayers could pay a ludicrous sum if the president tells the agency not to fight the case.
I think for many of us, this is very simple, and I think if this had been happening in any other countries, it would look an absolute, like a total shakedown of the American taxpayer.
Some lawmakers say the case should be delayed until Trump is out of office. A bipartisan group in the Senate has released draft language for Homeland Security funding, but it's still facing opposition. Democrats want limits on ICE agents after two killings last month in Minneapolis. Former acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf says some proposals, like requiring warrants signed by a judge, are unreasonable. And he says stopping the use of masks requires more debate.
Protecting the officer's safety if they need to cover their face, because you will have people that will take pictures and they will find out who these individuals are, and they go after their family, they go after the officer, they leave death threats.
A California judge has overruled a ban on masks there, but says officers have to display ID. If an agreement isn't reached by Wednesday, Homeland Security will be shut down. As Congress debates reforms to immigration enforcement, some states are acting on their own. Michigan lawmakers have introduced a bill removing immunity from state law for federal agents who violate the Fourth Amendment, notably arresting people based on personal characteristics. The bill's sponsor, State Representative Carrie Renagin, says the Supreme Court looks likely to allow immigration stops based on racial profiling.
As a state lawmaker, I never ran for office thinking that I would have to protect Michiganders from the federal government in this way.
After viewing fully unredacted Epstein files, Maryland Democratic Congressman Jamie Raskin says the DOJ engaged in a cover-up of names mentioned in its investigation. Two other representatives say the unredacted documents incriminate at least six people. They're threatening to read the names on the House floor. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6 o'clock, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be mostly clear with an overnight low of 39 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 56. Today in history, in 1996, IBM supercomputer Deep Blue defeated world champion Garry Kasparov in chess for the first time. The quote of the day is from Russian novelist Dostoevsky, who said, quote, "If you want to be respected by others, the great thing is to respect yourself. Only by that, only by self-respect, will you compel others to respect you." Tribal leaders are gathered at the National Congress of American Indians in Washington, D.C., calling on members to hear and to mentor Native youth. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders from across the country are gathered in Washington, D.C. this week for the National Congress of American Indians 2026 Winter Session and State of Indian Nations Address. NCI Youth Commission co-presidents Jonas Canusa and Angelina Serna kicked off Monday morning's assembly by delivering the Youth Commission speech. Serna says her message to tribal leaders is to recognize the contributions being made by Native youth.
I really talk about tokenism when it comes to Native youth, and really putting youth at the forefront and having youth at these tables, at these conversations, and giving youth that opportunity to really learn, but also for the adults to be learners and teachers as well, and incorporating language and culture in everything that we do, because what we do has spirit and has a purpose.
Canusa says his message to attendees is to help find ways for Native youth to get more opportunities, especially for those who live in remote areas.
Opening roles for more Native youth, I think Native youth in rural reservations have a hard time maybe connecting to maybe internships, fellowships, maybe just early on new jobs, entry jobs, because of those location barriers.
The Youth Commission co-presidents also touched on safety concerns when it comes to Native people and recent federal immigration actions across the U.S. They also talked about the commission's work this week on Capitol Hill to advocate for funding, harm reduction, treatment, and recovery models for substance abuse. NCI President Mark Macaro, who delivered the State of Indian Nation speech, followed the Youth Commission's remarks by saying young Native people are an important part of the NCAI.
In my time here at NCAI, the youth started to say, you know, we have a voice. You know, what we have to say matters, and it matters in this moment. And, you know, we took stock of that and been making strides to have them be more inclusive. They're right. And their take on the world, their take on issues in Indian country is different than ours. We need to allow ourselves to hear that, but we also need to create those opportunities for us to mentor them.
NCAI's winter session continues Tuesday with updates from federal agencies, including the Departments of Justice, Transportation, and Housing. Leaders will also hear from some members of Congress from New Mexico and Washington State. The history and effects of Indian boarding schools will be investigated and documented under legislation reintroduced by Oklahoma Republican Congressman Tom Cole and Kansas Democratic Representative Cherise Davids. Cole is a member of the Chickasaw Nation, while Davids is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation of Wisconsin. She's one of the first two Native women elected to Congress and has long spoken of the boarding school era, including on C-SPAN in 2022.
The policies and assimilation practices of the United States had the sole purpose of culturally assimilating American Indian, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian children in residential boarding schools across the country. Children were coerced and compelled to attend boarding schools away from their home. Many children did not return to their families or their communities. Those that did return lost generations worth of cultural knowledge, stories, and traditions, and communities lost their language keepers, cultural practitioners, and future leaders.
House Resolution 7325 would establish a commission to investigate and report on the histories of more than 500 federally run boarding schools, which operated between 1819 through the 1970s. And on this day in 1763, the French-Indian War officially ended. The armies of France and England wrestled for territory in the Americas, with both sides swaying Native tribes to help their efforts. Some, including the Ojibwe and Winnebago, helped the French, while the Iroquois helped England. While the outcome was favorable for the British, the cost of the war compelled England to raise taxes on the 13 colonies, eventually spurring the American Revolution. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
New Mexico lawmakers are being asked to amplify state laws aimed at reducing sexual abuse in prisons after federal funding cuts to a nearly 25-year-old law passed under the Bush administration. Critics of the move say the termination of funds from the U.S. Department of Justice for the Prison Rape Elimination Act Resource Center endangers incarcerated people and corrections staff alike. Roz Brown reports.
New Mexico lawmakers are being asked to support state-specific laws that combat sexual violence in prisons after the Trump administration cut federal funding for the National Prison Rape Elimination Act. Passed by Congress in 2003, the bipartisan legislation established a nationwide zero-tolerance standard for sexual assault and rape in public and private correctional facilities. But last year, the U.S. Department of Justice cut funds for training and audits. Because of that, Equality New Mexico Executive Director Marshall Martinez says the state needs its own law to protect possible victims, including LGBTQ people in the correctional system.
What we're seeing right now is that the federal administration indicated that they will continue to wind down their enforcement until there is no enforcement mechanism at the federal level.
Martinez is hopeful House Bill 292 will get a hearing this month, even though the 2026 session is a short one and ends on February 19th. He adds that LGBTQ people in the prison system face higher rates of sexual violence than any other group. The Justice Department said it was cutting the funds to align with administration priorities and combating diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. While federal regulations will continue to exist, the DOJ is poised to no longer license auditors, so eventually there will be no one to monitor prison compliance. Martinez says the federal rules also apply to juvenile detention centers, putting young people within the system in danger. He notes before the regulations were finalized in 2013, there was little accountability for prison administrators.
And these regulations are what requires them to offer sexual assault nurses and counseling for people who have been victims. Without these regulations, they didn't have to offer any services. Somebody could experience sexual assault in prisons, and the warden could just say, that sucks, sorry for you.
According to the Council on Criminal Justice, a nonpartisan think tank, the Trump administration's DOJ has terminated 373 grants since last year, resulting in $820 million in lost funding. The money had gone toward violence reduction, victim services, juvenile justice and child protection, substance use and mental health treatment, and other state and local level public safety functions. This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection.
China's purge of two top generals has led to much speculation, especially since Xi Jinping has removed numerous military leaders in recent years. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. He says his best guess is that resistance to Xi's anti-corruption campaign in the People's Liberation Army led to the general's fall from grace. China's military is now in a weakened condition. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. China's purge of two top generals, General Zhang Youxia, long considered a confidant of Xi Jinping and a vice chairman of the powerful Central Military Commission, and General Liu Zhenli, has set off a wide range of interpretations. Officially, General Zhang, the lone Central Military Commission member with combat experience, is under investigation for, quote, grave violations of discipline and the law, which can mean just about anything. That has led to speculation that the real reason for his fall is that he questions Xi's likely desire for a fourth five-year term when the next party Congress convenes in 2027, or that he and Xi were at odds over how to handle Taiwan, or that Zhang shared nuclear secrets with the U.S., or that Xi is paranoid. None of these explanations strikes me as being persuasive. The purge leaves the seven-member Central Military Commission, a critical decision-making group equivalent to our National Security Council, with only one other member besides Xi. The situation reflects Xi's targeting of the People's Liberation Army brass almost from the beginning of his rule in 2012. Altogether, over 100 PLA officers have been removed in the Xi era, most for violations of Communist Party discipline, meaning corruption. Research by New York Times journalists found that of 31 generals and admirals in office in 2023, 9 were expelled from the Chinese Communist Party, 13 disappeared, and 2 were under investigation. All the major theater commands and military services have been affected. To discover what actually accounts for the purge of the two generals, we might take a look at what the People's Liberation Army's own newspaper had to say. A key article a week ago made these points. First, the purges pose, quote, some short-term difficulties and pains, but the stakes are high. Quote, the anti-corruption struggle concerns the party's absolute leadership over the military, concerns the nature and purpose of the PLA, and concerns the long-term peace and stability of the party and country. The placing of these two generals on file for disciplinary review and investigation once again demonstrates the clear stance of no forbidden zones, full coverage, and zero tolerance in anti-corruption. Second, the central issue is corruption, and the key to eliminating it is party leadership and loyalty to the party. Thus, says the newspaper, it is necessary to more deeply recognize that the fundamental principle and system of the party's absolute leadership over the military is playing a decisive role, and the strategic design, path arrangements, and target tasks for advancing toward world-class status have already become the entire military's shared understanding and common action, unquote. Third, a period of introspection is in order. The army, says the paper, is, quote, currently undergoing a special kind of tempering, just like removing impurities when refining steel. This is re-strengthening, re-purifying, recasting, and re-cohering, unquote. Fourth point, a new generation of officers will be installed. Taking charge in the future will be, quote, new era officers and soldiers who have grown up nurtured by Xi Jinping thought on strengthening the military, are trustworthy and reliable, admirable and respectable. And fifth, no one is immune to prosecution. The deep digging and thorough investigation of the two generals, says the newspaper, proves with irrefutable facts that no matter how high one's position or how great one's power, all are equal before party discipline and state laws. As long as one engages in corruption, there will be absolutely no leniency. Unquote. Reading between the lines of what the Chinese are saying, I think the core issue in General Zhang's removal is not that he was corrupt, but that he criticized the prolonged anti-corruption campaign Xi has been waging. Zhang may have believed, perhaps with good reason, that the anti-corruption campaign was damaging the military. It was hurting morale and readiness, depleting the officer corps of experienced leaders, and making the PLA look weak in the eyes of China's adversaries. Of interest in Chinese reporting of the purge is that it gave so much publicity to it. That speaks to Xi Jinping's high level of confidence that he could carry out a purge of one of the most senior people in the entire leadership. At the same time, this openness also reveals serious concerns about the military, its leadership, its dependability in warfare, its loyalty to Communist Party rule, and to Xi himself. Contrary to many assessments of China's military these days, it shows signs of instability, tension, and dysfunction. What looks formidable on the outside may be brittle within. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, February 10, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Eric Tagadoff, Isabel Charlet, Edwin J. Vieira, Brian Bull, and Roz Brown. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7.